Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Welcome to the stream. Today we are bringing you news and analysis from Sudan. Can the military coup be reversed? Let me bring in Hiba Morgan. She's our Al Jazeera correspondent who is on that story. Hiba, what is the headline?
Well, it's been fast moving, but today's headline apparently is the release of some of the political prisoners who were arrested on the morning of the takeover. So, again, very fast moving developments here in Sudan. But the latest we have is the release of the political prisoners, although there are many who still remain under arrest.
We have a lot to talk about in this show, and I bring you not just Hiba, but Hulud and also Muzan. Nice to have both of you ladies with us. Hulud, first of all, please introduce yourself. Tell our audience who you are, what you do. Although if you've been watching the news in the past hour or so, you would have seen her do the analysis right on Al Jazeera News. Go ahead. Welcome to the stream.
Thank you, Femi. Hi, everyone. I'm Hulud, and I'm the managing partner of a think tank here in Khartoum called Insight Strategy Partners that we set up to support the transition, which is having an interesting time at the moment, but more on that soon.
All right. We want to hear more about that in just a moment. Muzan, welcome to the stream. Introduce yourself to our international audience.
Thank you very much. I'm Muzan Anil. I'm a political activist, a co-founder of the Innovation, Science and Technology Think Tank for People-Centered Development, and a fellow at the Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy.
As you can see, we have a very informed lineup. If you are on YouTube right now, the comment section is, it's here, but your comments, your questions about Sudan, about Sudan's coup, and I will do my best to bring those comments and questions into the show. We are going to start with a little bit of recap from the last couple of days, and to that, I'm going to look to my colleagues at Start Here, who are going to take us back.
Breaking news out of Sudan, where the military has arrested several civilian ministers and officials.
Thousands of people have taken to the streets to protest against Monday's military coup.
This guy, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has taken control and kicked out the prime minister. People are really angry. They're back on the streets like they were 2 years ago. That's when they brought down a president they blamed for 30 years of oppression.
Muzan, I'm going to start with a tweet that's come in about this show, about this half hour. We want peace in Sudan. This comment comes from MD Rakabul Hassan. Your thoughts right now. Respond to that tweet.
We want peace. We want peace. We want justice and we want freedom is what the Sudanese protesters have been repeating long prior to the December revolution in 2018. And they continue to. Their interest in peace have been shown clearly and promptly in the response of the public to the coup, in how early, within the early hours of the coup, people took over the streets and started building barricades and announced their strikes, some of the strikes that were pre-announced almost a month before the coup, because the coup was anticipated to anyone in Sudan and also to anyone who would observe objectively the situation in Sudan. The partnership was falling apart. It was clear that the path was not taken to a place of peace and justice and freedom that people have struggled for. It was being called the partnership of blood, since it was actually a compromise with killers. And the killers have shown their true faces again. They've killed in the streets of Sudan at least 18 confirmed deaths in the last 11 days since the coup. Those are the confirmed ones. And keep in mind that most of the Sudanese public right now has no access to internet. To be able to access the internet and express yourself as a Sudanese takes extraordinary measures and a good percentage of risk on oneself as well.
Okay.
Many detained, including the workers who went on strike, the workers in the White Nile factory have been detained, the staff of the Jazeera University have been detained. All of that is what is happening right now in Sudan. It is clear to the Sudanese public that the path to peace can only be done through a full revolution, and that's what the protesters are saying in the streets right now, right? That we will no longer accept half a revolution. We will no longer accept a compromise. That's also what the resistance committees are saying in their demands. That they're calling for a full
I want to share the conversation with your co-panelists. I want you to leave them something to say. Let me bring them in here. Halud, thank you, Ms. Am. I'll come right back to you. Halud, what is the state of Sudan 1 week into a military coup? In the last few moments, we're getting breaking news of political prisoners being released. What else is happening?
Well, the interesting thing to note is that we've had almost a sort of immediate shift in power after the coup. You know, the army sort of came in very hot and heavy. They arrested a whole group of politicians and then activists. But immediately we saw, as Muzan said, that response from the street. And so that has sort of, you know, tilted this power balance on its axis almost immediately. And since then, we've seen, you know, civil disobedience is announced, the largest protest probably globally in recent years, with 4 million people coming out on the 30th. We have seen the basis of this military coup crumble. Also, we've seen the regional allies or regional supporters of the coup have also come out publicly now to condemn the coup, or at least condemn, or at least call for resolution to the crisis. And so we're seeing this sort of shift away from power concentrated in military hands, which arguably it has been for the largest part of the past 2 years, shift again into civilian hands. What that looks like and how to take that forward and how to reach civilian goals, that's the challenge that we're facing now.
Yeah, but I want to understand what it's like for people on the street in Sudan, the ones that you have spoken to. Let me start here on my laptop. This is NetBlocks. NetBlocks is a global internet monitor. And this is fascinating, this graph that they put together. This is last week, just before October the 25th. This is the usage online. And then suddenly the dip, the huge dip, there was a spike when the mobile internet was restored last Tuesday, and then here we are right here with virtually no connectivity. That is an issue. What else is happening, Iba?
Well, there are so many things happening. When you look at it in terms of economy, there has been more goods, let's say, available in the market, and it's obvious that the military is trying to show that, you know, in the 1 week that we took over or in the 11 days that we've taken over, we've been able to provide you with goods. We've been able to reduce the price of fuel after the lifting of subsidies. But then I think one thing I'm impressed about is how people are thinking. Normally, I think you would see people quite happy that there's more commodities in the market and that there's been a drop in prices. But people are asking questions, you know, and I was quite surprised. Well, I wouldn't say surprised, but quite impressed to hear people say things like, it goes on to show how far the previous government, the government that has been ousted by the military, is not really to blame for the economic crisis. You know, when you have the military taking over, and in just a few days, the fuel prices has dropped. We have flour in the market. We have more bread. We have the ports open. People are now saying that they believe that the military actually had a role in the economic crisis that was created during the times of the transitional government. One thing we're also hearing is, you know, the lack of the freedom that has been taken away. People can't express themselves freely. So during the first days of the coup, you know, when we try to interview people to get their sense of what's going on, the first thing you'd hear is, am I going to get in trouble with the military? And it takes me back to the days, you know, where we'd find people protesting on the streets. And sometimes you'd find a few people, like about 15, 20, maybe even 50. And I would always ask myself, what difference does it make, you know, when you have about 20 people protesting for a cause? But then since the military takeover, you know, now I understand that it's a freedom of expression. And I don't think we'll be seeing that much. People have already been expressing fears about their views. You know, they don't want to openly express their views on the development. Some of them just say, you know, I just want to go on living. But there's also the number of people who talk to us about how angry they are because of the takeover. Yeah.
Sorry, Hiba. I was just going to say we've also seen that people actually have sort of traversed this point where they understand exactly what the dangers are, but they're still pushing for their demands to be heard. They're still pushing for the original demands of the 2018 revolution with the knowledge of what has happened since. And I think that, you know, this regime that we had before 2018, and to some extent, the same people that we see in this current coup leadership are, you know, they have done some frightful things, and yet we still see this resolve from the streets. So I think you're right, there is this awareness now of, you know, what it means, what the duties as a citizen are, and that have never really been cultivated before. There's this awareness, right, that's coming through, and it's really kind of causing that shift. The military's might, the military's strength, the military's propensity for violence doesn't really scare people in the same way anymore, and I think that's a really important shift.
Rizan, I'm really curious.
What I will add here, if I may, is that while the awareness is actually good to have, but I will put as actually the first reason why people are capable of facing the military coup right now is the organization. The level of organization that we're seeing with the resistance committees, the neighborhood resistance committees that are actually right now covering the basic needs of the neighborhoods that are doing the civil disobedience, covering their basic needs, and also some of them working on electing and selecting leaders, electing and selecting members of subnational parliaments, so they are ready to take power and take over the governance of their areas. This level of organization that we're also seeing just hours before the Millions March on the 30th of October, the Kereri Neighborhood Resistance Committee put out its seven demands that included no negotiation and no compromise with the military and no going back to military rule. And within hours, it was adopted by more and more neighborhood committees, and we saw that before the morning of the 30th, it was already, at least for the Khartoum, the tripartite capital, it was the demands of the capital, and it was the demands we also heard in the streets when we marched on October 30th. So this level of organization, keeping in mind that this is being done under total internet shutdown, radio stations are even being scrambled, we lost calls for the 24 hours of the 30th of October during the march, which put people in more risk, because people could not basically warn the other resistance committees and the other protesters that the security forces are coming. And due to that, we actually lost at least two martyrs on the day of the 30th of October. So this level of organization is what allowing the Sudanese revolution to continue. And focus must be put on resistance committees and their big role on this.
All right, let me suggest another potential reason why the resistance movement is doing well, and that may well be international reaction and international condemnation to the military coup. It may well be. I'm going to ask Kalu about that. But first, I want to go to a senior analyst at the International Crisis Group. This is Honus Horner. As soon as he finishes speaking, Kalu, please react. Tell us more. Here we go.
The withholding of aid by the United States, by the World Bank, $700 million and $2 billion respectively, is really much more aimed at avoiding allowing the military to accrue any credit for any success that they may have in alleviating the needs of Sudanese. That aid was given in the first place with the strategic idea that it would improve the civilian-led government's ability to show Sudanese that it could respond adequately to the needs of Sudanese.
I mean, I think Jonas is right. There has been a lot of international pressure sort of being brought to bear on the coup leaders. But I would say that it's incumbent on international leaders who support civilian democracy to put pressure on those that don't, right? That's where that conversation is most useful. And I think we've seen recently that the United States and the United Kingdom have come out with a statement, a quad statement with Saudi Arabia and the UAE, two of the biggest supporters of the military, and they have put pressure on them to sort of revert back. Now, that is sort of very satisfying in terms of international relations and being able to make things happen, but I'm not sure to what extent the street is going to say, yeah, that's fine for us now. We'll happily go back to the 24th of October. As Muzin said, there are lots of calls coming out from different quarters in Sudanese society saying that this is not what we want. We want more than that. We want full civilian law. We want it ASAP. And bearing in mind also that there are
certain
actors who are not included in any of these condemnations of the coup.
I would just like to add to that the modest amounts of so-called aid that was sent to Sudan, they were mostly used and totally spent on the bureaucracy of international aid organizations. That we saw and that we know. Very small amounts actually reached the people. So, yes, maybe withholding these funds will have an impact on the availability of hard currency for the military, for the military council, the military coup council. But in reality, for the people, these amounts were not just only modest, but also they came coupled and conditioned with economic policies that alienated the government, that were used as the narrative for the coup by the military council. It was not in any way that I see it, or the Sudanese public sees it helpful to the Sudanese people. In reality, even the statements that we heard from UK ambassador or the US special envoy to the Horn of Africa actually called the killing of 18 martyrs, the injuries of hundreds and hundreds detained, a restraint, an exercise of restraint by the army, while he called that the rightful demands of the Sudanese people are unrealistic to expect a fully civilian government. This is unacceptable. The way I see it, that the international community's interference has been counter-revolutionary. What I would say regarding the statements we're saying right now is that the push by the people on the ground have forced those parties to utilize the language of the revolution to try to pass the compromises. Okay. However, eventually, whenever they actually try to put a compromise on the table, I strongly believe it will be rejected by the public, seeing the reaction in the streets right now.
Let's talk about the military. Hiba, help me do this. I'm going to start on my laptop with Abdul Rahim, who told us just before we started this program, just military go back to the border and forget political issues and leave them to political parties. That thought there. Also, I want to bring in Tigreed, who spoke to us a little bit earlier on video.
The problem, I think, that actually got us to the situation was leadership not reading the room, whether it was the civilians or the military, without actually both siding this issue. The most important thing right now is to get out of this military coup. The military haven't shown good faith. They started off this entire process with this violent crackdown that led to deaths, fatalities, injuries, and mass censorship of an entire country. So we can safely say that we don't trust the military. We don't trust them to lead us to democracy. And any issues that we have with the government, the legitimate government, can be solved by means other than a military coup.
Yeah, well, we actually approached the military. I know you have done as well to get comments.
There has,
and they refused to be on the program. They wouldn't answer any of our.
Yes, we've spoken.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've spoken to some of the military commanders and as well as the pro-military parties. That's a bit. I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around that. But yeah, we've spoken to the military commanders and the pro-military parties. And I think there is a lot of anger and there is a lot of resentment towards the army. And then you see there's also I think the military does have its concerns about about the steps they've taken and how far it will bring them when it comes to accountability, how far down it will bring them. So I think one thing that you get a sense of is that, you know, we are the ones in charge. We should be responsible for the country's stability, and that political parties have not been very united, and they've not been very, they have not stepped up to the game when it came to the issue of leadership. So that's one thing that you hear repeatedly from them. But the issue of accountability as well, you know, when you talk about, when we ask them about the protesters killed, about those who are detained, there's this sense that this is our leadership. We're the ones in controls. We're the ones who brought this transition, just because, you know, when protesters went and set up that sitting in front of the army headquarters on the 6th of April 2019, we're the one who ousted Bashir. Therefore, anything else that comes after is our responsibility. So this sense of, you know, we're the power, we're the control, we're the ones with the guns, but we're also the ones with the force and the might, and we're the ones with the authority because we're the ones who took the step. There's that sense that you keep getting from them. And then when you look at the street, it's just every single time you hear that narrative from the military, especially in their statements, and you turn to the streets, the anger seems to keep growing, you know? It's like, no, you did not overthrow Bashir until we protested against the situation, until we voiced our anger. And this is something you hear from all protesters. You know, we're the ones who took the steps. We're the ones who turned the wheels of in motion. And you guys were basically just a step in this whole process. And your role ultimately is to preserve the security of the nation. Yes, but that's at the borders, not internally, and not targeting at, you know, protesters who are simply expressing their their rights to have a civilian leadership, to live in democracy, to have freedom, peace, and justice, the motto of this revolution. So again, it's very hard to get a sense of how far you can do with the military, do away with the military. They seem to be very adamant that we're going to form a transitional government, we're going to have a sovereignty council, we will be in charge, and we want to form a civilian transitional government led by Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok or anybody else who we choose, but they don't want to be removed from the picture. That's something completely opposite of what we hear from people in the streets. And a complete, it seems to be in line with what we're hearing from the international mediators. I've heard earlier from Muzan and Khulood about the role of international mediators. But they seem to get a sense that we can't take the military out of the picture. And that's something you hear from the military as well. We are not getting out of this equation. If you guys want to solve this crisis, you're going to have to find a way with us in it, and preferably having the upper hand, if not equal hands, with the civilians and with the protesters on the streets.
I'd like to add something to what Hibe said, is that the military in reality was not a step in the path of the revolution. It was a compromise. It was a compromise that was pushed on the people, and actually by mediators similar to the ones at work right now. Basically, the military was rewarded for a massacre by a power sharing agreement. That's what happened earlier. And the people in Sudan are clear that they will not repeat that. It is it's very disappointing yet expected that the international mediators will try to force another compromise on the Sudanese people. It's also very expected and disappointing that international media will keep ignoring the actual leader of the revolutionary movement in the streets, which is the resistance committees. You can watch international media and mainstream media for days about Sudan and not know that there is such a thing as a resistance committee.
Muzan, does that have a difference to what is happening on the ground? If the resistance is happening on the ground, grassroots level, does it matter what international media say?
What matters over here is that if we had access to the internet, we would be sharing that ourselves, expressing that ourselves and sharing it with our allies, and even sharing the experience with other revolutionary nations that are working on a revolution right now against dictatorships. And that's how a revolution works, right? You cannot have a revolution in one country. It doesn't work that way. There will always be counter-revolutionary regimes and governments around you that's trying to bring you back into under a dictatorship. If we had the access to express ourselves, it wouldn't have mattered. But the fact that we do not have the access, and international media, that some of them say that they align with the values of the Sudanese people, international organizations as well, who have the capacity and the resources to carry our voices and amplify it while we are under internet shutdown, they refuse to do that. They carry a narrative that makes it easier for the military to jump in with a compromise than carry the actual narrative of grassroots movement and why it will not be possible to push such a compromise on the Sudanese people.
Khulood, I'm just looking at the title for today's discussion. Can the military coup in Sudan be reversed? And then we started the program with some breaking news, which made me say, oh, maybe. What do you think?
I mean, the point isn't can it. The point is, should it? Yes, it can be reversed if enough pressure is applied on all sides, on the civilians to compromise, on the military to sort of be incentivized to realize that that's sort of the best option out of this. The question is, should it be reversed? You know, the previous setup, as we know, due to this coup, was not exactly successful. It's only pressing pause on the military's sort of advancement in terms of wanting to take over. The reasons why the military staged this coup have not suddenly disappeared and will not disappear if we suddenly revert back to the 24th of October status quo. The question is, and Muzan is right, there is a lack of imagination from mediators, both domestic and international, about breaking the sort of standard policy response to coups, which is always to say you still need to have some version of contingent of the very oppressors you're trying to unseat. You know, there's not much room within that model of completely getting rid of, for example, in our case, the military. And so we need to have a rethink, the international community, the mediators, whoever, and I don't believe that they have necessarily bad intentions. I just think they're ill-equipped and often ahead of any sort of engagement.
Khulood, thank you for meaningfully engaging with the stream today. Muzan and Hibe as well. Let me show you where they are online. Hibe Morgan, back here on my laptop. Halud on Twitter. And Muzan as well. What a trio. Thanks for watching. See you next time.